Good afternoon. This is the professor, Dr. Ron Daniels, president of the Institute of the Black World 21st Century and distinguished lecturer emeritus from York College, City University of New York. Welcome you to this July 27th edition of Vantage Point here on 99.5 FM. That's WBAI on the Pacifica Network in collaboration with ycradio.org. That's right. The York College online radio audience is plugged in to the conversation. Well, today we're going to continue to focus in part on the COVID-19 epidemic, bringing back a segment that we were not able to connect on a couple of weeks ago, COVID-19 and institutional racism. We'll be joined soon by, we hope this time, Dr. Leon McDougall, who is president of the National Medical Association. And then later on, we'll be joined again by our in-house guru on hip-hop, Paradise Gray, talking about hip-hop activism and the struggle for social justice. Before we get into our program, once again, I just want to encourage people, as we are doing on this station, to take care. We're doing a reasonably good job, actually an excellent job. People are looking to New York as a model of how people ought to behave. And yet there are some outliers out there sometimes, and you know, we want everybody to be disciplined, wear your mask, do social distancing, wash your hands, and please don't be confrontational. Don't be upset because you have to wear a mask. And please don't fall for the line that it's your freedom of speech and all of that kind of stuff. If you're in New York and you drive a car, you have insurance. You don't have an option, right? And you also have a seatbelt. There's some things that are mandated, that are for the collective good of the people. And in this instance, it's really not about you. It's about others. If you want to get sick and you can get sick all by yourself, that's your business. We give you the democratic right to do that for your civil liberties. But we don't want you to spread it to others. And so, and by the way, even if you've been tested and you're clear, wear it as an example. Wear it as an example so everybody is on board. And please don't go into one of these shops and stores and accost somebody from Home Depot or one of these different places because they're asking you to wear a mask. Already we see that I think it's not Home Depot, but one of the major stores is already backing up saying, well, they, you know, we don't want to do this because they're threatening our customers. Why would that even be an issue in the first place? But it also speaks to an abdication of national leadership on a scale that's abominable. But anyway, let's care for each other, all right? So WBAI Buddies is the next thing I want to talk about. Yeah, y'all got to help me out here. I'm getting embarrassed. I mean, I talk about WBAI Buddies every week consistently, but we're not getting enough WBAI Buddies enroll. So could y'all help a brother out? And by helping a brother out, I don't mean helping me. I mean to help the station out, to help us do what we do. Now, I'm told that, you know, there's some goodies we can give away and all of that, and I'll be mentored and taught about how we can do that, premiums and so forth. But the premium is WBAI. And so I really, really, really want people to think about that. The kind of programming that we attempt to bring on Vantage Point, the kind of programming that's presented on this station in general, is worthy of your support. And I need your support, you know, in terms of the work that we're doing. Some of the issues that are going to be discussed today and coming up are things that have been aired on WBAI. And so in order to continue that, I need your support. A WBAI buddy is simply a person, one of our listeners who can afford it, who will go to give2wbai.org, that's give2wbai.org, and, you know, if you, $10 a month or more, credit card, savings account, any of those means to become a sustaining member, a sustaining contributor, which means that you're able to help this station know how much revenue is coming in. There's already now a new plan, so you're not going to be hearing constant every day, you know, 30 days of pitching and all that. It's going to be spread out, which I think is a great idea. So let's all work together. But we need WBAI buddies because that just creates such a foundation for this station to be enormously successful. So you can also call 516-620-3602, 516-620-3602. And there are people waiting right now to, if I haven't explained it well, they'll explain it to you and they'll tell you how to get it done. It is painless, really. It's good because it just, you don't have to worry about it. It just comes out of your checking account, debit card, credit card, savings account every month. The other thing, please continue we want to continue to put the line out, the Community Cares Listening Line, which is a project of the Black Family Summit of the Institute of the Black World 21st Century, an example of a partnership with WBAI. This is for people, you know, there are folks out there who, you know, this pandemic is not over. People who are feeling anxious, people who are feeling alone, people who have issues or who may need some help and some counseling. We've established this Community Cares Listening Line. Take the number down, share it. And if you're out there right now who need help, 877-719-1117. That's 877-719-1117. Finally, we just want to make you aware that Institute of the Black World 21st Century on this coming Saturday, August 1st, on the anniversary, the 100th anniversary of Marcus Garvey's convening of the International Convention of the Negro Peoples of the World, in which he brought delegates from over 2,500 to 3,000 delegates from all over the world to Harlem. And on the first day, went to Madison Square Garden and filled it up with 25,000 people. No email, no Snapchat, none of that. What an amazing organizer Marcus Garvey was. And so we'll have a major forum, 7 o'clock to 9 o'clock p.m., on this coming Saturday, August 1st, the actual 100th anniversary. A number of people will be involved, and I'll talk about that later. P.J. Patterson from Jamaica, the president of Ghana. All kinds of folks are going to be a part of that, including Paradise Gray, who will be on the show later. So those are my announcements. I want to now get into our guest, our first guest for today, someone that I respect greatly because of the work that he does and the support that he has provided for the Institute of the Black World 21st Century, none other than Dr. Leon McDougall, who is the president-elect but soon to be the president of the National Medical Association. Dr. Leon McDougall, finally, we're so happy to have you here on Vantage Point.
Well, thank you, Dr. Daniels. So glad that I can join you and your audience.
Well, before we, and again, congratulations on your election. And again, we're so thankful to you for the strong support that you provided for the Black Family Summit. As soon as the pandemic broke out, you know, Baba Leonard Dunstan reached out to you and others, and you were right there immediately and began to do the work that we needed to do to get our people clear about the nature of this virus. And we're going to talk about that a bit in a moment. But before we get into our specific interview, I just want to just not take things for granted. Would you just share a little bit about the background, sort of the origins and mission of the National Medical Association?
Oh, wonderful question. So the National Medical Association was established in 1895, and there's a good story behind that. So listen to this. So in 1870 and 1872, three African-American physicians were not allowed to be seated in the House of Delegates for the American Medical Association. So in other words, they were not allowed to join the American Medical Association. So what does that say? That's 1970, Dr. Mm-hmm. Daniels. It said 1870. So the Civil War ended in 1865. So that just speaks to how long discrimination and prejudice and even towards the professional class goes back to that length of time. So when we talk about these health disparities today, it has roots. Also, here's another fact. So in 1963, so 1963, there were about 5,000 African-American physicians as compared to about 227,000 European American physicians. Now, what's so important about that American Medical Association membership? So, back in those days, Dr. Daniels, you had to belong to a professional society to obtain hospital privileges. You had to belong to the AMA to be selected for specialty training. So in the midst of all that discrimination, the National Medical Association was started in Atlanta in 1895, and providing that society for people to gain privileges, but there were still a lot of restrictions involved, and that denial of membership lasted through the mid '60s, Dr. Daniels, and the apology for that discrimination did not formally take place until 2008. That's wow. Just 12 years ago, 2008. Wow. So we are the collective voice of African-American physicians, approximately 45,000 in the United States, and we advocate for parity and justice in health. So that's what we're about, and that's why I'm so happy to be on this program with you, speaking to one of the major issues of our time, and that would be COVID-19.
Right. Now, before we get into that specific discussion, let's talk a little bit about you as a physician. I hail from Ohio, spent most of my adult life in Ohio. I know you're from Columbus, but are you native to Columbus, Ohio, or did you come from other places, and where did you go to medical school? And just give us a little bit about your background, because you're obviously a socially conscious and activist physician.
Okay, well, born and raised in Sandusky, Ohio.
Oh, I know where that Sandusky, is.
Yes, it's on the shores of Lake Erie between Cleveland and Toledo. And what's important about that in regards to my career is we had a black physician in Sandusky, Ohio, by the name of Waddell Hunter. And I would, as a small child, grow up hearing these stories about the wonderful work of Waddell Hunter, Dr. Hunter. And interestingly, so Dr. Daniels, during a reunion event at my medical school at The Ohio State University College of Medicine, I would discover that Dr. Waddell Hunter went to The Ohio State College of Medicine, and that's where he received his degree, and actually went to Ohio State as an undergrad and was a Kappa. And he's from Yellow Springs, Ohio. So that's where I'm from, with the medical school, with the undergrad at University of Toledo Medical School at Ohio State, and then completed my family medicine residency at the Naval Hospital Camp Pendleton, California, and then eventually came full circle to return to Columbus and Ohio State.
All right. Okay. Well, a lot of Ohio roots, and famous amusement park up there in Sandusky, and of course, just so many, many good things that I think about as somebody who spent most of my adult life in Youngstown, Ohio. Dr. McDougall, talk to us, to our audience, about the ongoing impact of the coronavirus pandemic on black people. And I'd like for you to also speak specifically about the issue of there are some people who don't quite understand that even if you get the infection and you recover, that there may be some after effects. And I don't think that's getting enough attention. But sort of talk to our audience, though, about the ongoing impact, because we want to make our people clear about the fact that we really, really have to pay attention to this virus.
So, yes. So just as I'm going to compare this to HIV. So back in the 80s, when HIV was initially diagnosed, many in our community were told that it was a white gay male disease, and black people didn't have to worry about contracting HIV. So let's come full circle. Now we're the leading group of people diagnosed each year with HIV. So we don't have some special protection against viruses. As a matter of fact, in the communities in which we live and the lack of access to care that we have, it puts us at higher risk for contracting various outbreaks as it pertains to viral illnesses. So HIV is a virus, and COVID-19, coronavirus, infectious disease 2019 is a virus, and it is disproportionately infecting and impacting the health of black and brown and American Indian communities. So this is real. This is no hoax. Don't let the national discourse or discussion fool you. It is serious, and we must take this serious. And so if you look at the news and television, you see folks out here at the beach and having a good time. Well, that's a problem, and is not to be replicated. You see some folks at the highest level of our leadership downplaying the importance of wearing a mask. Not so. It's very important to wear a mask in public. And so, for one, the mask actually helps prevent you, perhaps unknowingly, having coronavirus transmitted to your loved ones, family, and friends. Because about 80% of folks who contract COVID-19, they may have little or no symptoms at all, and however may be infecting others unknowingly. So it's a big issue. And I'm talking to Dr. Ron Daniels today, and we bring this news to you. So quiet as it's kept, people don't want you to know that it's affecting you at a higher rate. As a matter of fact, there was just an order a week or so ago asking that hospitals now send the data on infection to the HHS, not CDC, bypass CDC. And CDC, that's what they do. They've been doing for years. That's the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. So you've had an order from the executive branch of our government saying, we want you to, hospitals, hey, we don't even want you to send your demographic data on who contracted COVID-19, who died, who had health issues related to that. Don't send it to CDC. Send it to some other entity that we're creating, and we'll let you know what we find out. So Dr. Daniels, people don't want, there are certain people that may not want us to know that we're dying faster, getting infected more often, and having complications of the disease more often. They're trying to keep that on the down low. And that's a problem. That's a problem, Dr. Daniels.
Well, I know it's a problem, and that's one of the things I also just wanted to have you comment on, because, you know, we talk about this issue of institutional racism and what that's it looks like. And I've been pounding on this, because to the degree that you have, and, you know, I just call him Agent Orange, and in this instance, he is – you know, Spike Lee calls them, I call him Orange Man, Spike Lee calls him Agent Orange because he's infecting the world with misinformation, the country with misinformation and all kinds of distortions. But we have like the governor of Georgia, the governor of Texas, the governor of Arizona, all these states, Georgia, Texas, Florida, Arizona. I mean, all of them are taking a blasé attitude towards this virus. Now, they're beginning to have to change their tune somewhat. But I guess the point I'm making is, to the degree that they're doing that, it's not, I mean, white people obviously are affected. So we're not downplaying that. Anyone who's affected, the life is valuable. But overwhelmingly, as you're pointing out, it is black and brown people who are not only being infected. One of the things that I've highlighted is, and you touched on it, is there's, you know, vascular disorders, the heart, the lungs. I mean, there's all kind of things. You may recover, but you may recover and be permanently harmed or permanently damaged. And so it's almost as if they don't give a damn about black people, as Kanye West once famously said about another president. Your comment on that?
So my comment would be that COVID-19 does not have a political party. It does not care what race and ethnicity you are. However, that being said, black and brown people are suffering more from the disease and the infection. So when we talk about the longer term outcomes, that's something else that's not really being spoken to. Mostly they talk about on TV how many cases are in the U.S. and how many people died. They don't talk about the number of people who are now on dialysis. I have a patient right now, Dr. Daniels, 35-year-old African-American male, contracted COVID-19, was in the ICU, pneumonia. He's on dialysis now. Hopefully his kidneys will improve to the point where he can someday come off of dialysis. But when you contract COVID-19 and it becomes severe, you develop an inflammatory state, and these inflammatory cytokines damage tissue, kill tissue. They injure your, as you were speaking to before, they injure your organs. You may have kidney damage, you may have lung damage, you may have liver damage. So it is nothing to take lightly. So, and it speaks to that old adage, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. And at this time, we really don't have a cure for COVID-19. We don't necessarily have a vaccine that's been proven effective over going through all the phases of the research trial. Yes, it sounds as though they've had some trials with 30, 40 people have had some positive response developing antibodies to the vaccine that has not yet been tested in its effectiveness in the community. So we still have quite a ways to go to make certain that, one, it's effective for people in communities with COVID-19 higher outbreaks. It's going to protect them from contracting the acute illness. And two, whether when it's given to a larger group of people in the next phase of the experimental trial, that we won't see a whole lot of side effects. So that's like with a lot of these medicines, there'll be a pill that comes out and oh Lord, this is, you know, the next best thing to slice bread, and lo and behold, you know, once it gets released nationally, sometimes these medicines actually have to be recalled because once it gets out to the general public and different types of people take the medication or the treatment, it's found out, well, it's not the panacea we thought it was, and actually a certain percentage of folks in the population develop untoward side effects or unwanted reactions to this. So So it's we're apparently making some initial progress. And then there's the other thing about that too. A lot of these, Dr. Daniels, you know about this. A lot of times when they're doing these trials, they never don't have any black people in them. You know, so
right.
So I haven't been, you know, I'm not privy to, and I haven't heard yet what's the racial makeup of the folks who had this initial success with these trials. Now, yes, it is true that we're all, you know, biologically the same, and it may not necessarily be the race. It may be the racism that's the factor in why we may be so susceptible to certain illnesses. So, and I don't necessarily think they have a biomarker for our racism. So that's why, you know, people are trying to jump out there and, you know, hallelujah, we have a vaccine and this, that, and the other thing. It's we're a ways away from testing this in a way that people can be assured that it is safe and effective. Right. So that would be my thought concerning that, Dr. Daniels.
Well, Dr. Leon McDougall, president-elect, soon to be the president of the National Medical Association, having given us the background and the history. It's almost like you know, a Richard Allen story. So many times we have tried to be a part of mainstream institutions only to be rejected. We formed our own, and the National Medical Association, representing some 45,000 black physicians across the country, thank you so much for joining us today and sharing this very potent information to keep our people well and safe. Thank you so much for spending time with us this afternoon on Vantage Point.
And thank you so much for the work you're doing with the Black Family Summit, convening since Hurricane Katrina. It's wonderful. You're a leader, and I appreciate you.
All right. Thank you so much. All right. And that's the Black Family Summit convening under Katrina. That's under the leadership of Dr. Nell Prim and, of course, our convener, Barbara Leonard Dunston. Well, next up, we're going to change course a little bit and talk about social justice activism. But from the perspective of hip hop, and we're delighted to have joined us for that conversation, our in-house guru, as I'm now calling him, none other than Paradise Gray. Of course, he is the founder of the Black Watch movement, and also a person who has been working on these issues for many, many years, and of course, known as one of the original members of X-Clan. This is the 30th anniversary of To the East, Black Words. Once again, we welcome to Vantage Point none other than Paradise Gray. Brother Paradise, welcome to Vantage Point.
Hey, peace and love, Dr. Daniels.
All right, well, let's dive right into it. You know, you're actually working on a salute to Marcus Garvey. I announced on the show today that on this coming Saturday, we're going to have a commemoration, a major international forum on the life and legacy of Marcus Garvey against the backdrop of the convening of the International Convention of the Negro Peoples of the World, one of the most amazing gatherings of black people in our history. And Marcus Garvey, in my judgment, the greatest mass organizer we have ever produced. Talk to our audience, if you would, about the impact of Garvey on hip-hop.
Wow, the impact of Garvey on our lives definitely translates through the arts into hip-hop, from the concept of red, black, and green and African unification. Artists like Bob Marley, George Clinton, James Brown, passed that torch on to hip-hop to carry on the many incredible concepts of African unification, Black is Beautiful, on, and it inspired groups like the Last Poets, and it inspired groups like X-Clan and Public Enemy and KRS-One, and many of the concepts that we talked about has its very roots in the philosophies of Marcus Garvey.
Mm. So as you were coming along, I mean, were people really, you know, kind of conscious of, you know, Garvey's speeches and what he stood for? And if so, where did people learn that from? Did they learn it from, you know, elders like Abubakar Sonny Carson, or how did people become acquainted with Marcus Garvey?
Well, early on in hip hop, it was traditional for the DJs to do mixes where they would play instrumental hip hop tracks, and over the top of it, they would overlay speeches by Marcus Garvey, Malcolm X, and Dr. King. And X-Clan was influenced directly by Marcus Garvey's teachings through Abubakar and the Committee to Honor Black Heroes, who they had laid out a elders council for us. And the elders were there to give us background research and information about great things that were done in the past. And speaking of To the East Blackwoods, if a person were to look on the cover of To the East Blackwoods, they would see a lot of traditional black leaders dating way back. And Marcus Garvey, actually the only person whose picture is on the cover twice.
Wow. All right. So Marcus Garvey, impact. Now, talk to us about today. You know, there's a movement exploding in the streets and so forth. Is there a role for hip-hop activism in today's Black Lives Matter movement?
Today's movement is an extension of the movement that began with Marcus Garvey. You know, the struggle continues. It's a continuous movement. And since the 90s, the late 80s to the early 90s, hip-hop has carried that conscious black message in many of his songs. From the song, The Message, through Curtis Blow, through Run DMC, all throughout the ages of hip-hop, there's always been a vanguard of Black is Beautiful. And that Say It Loud, I'm Black and I'm Proud vibe permeates the culture.
Mm. So, again, that's one of the questions I was going to ask you is, who are some of the elders and artists today who are grooming some of the up-and-coming artists, you know, to be hip-hop activists and to sort of carry the torch?
There are many artists that have other artists in their wings. You know, people that did a lot of great work was Poor Righteous Teacher, Dead Prez. You know, Chuck D is still doing an incredible job. Ice-T is still dropping a lot of positive, revolutionary black concepts in his music. But it's not really a lot of hands-on-hands mentoring going on as it is that, you know, permeating in our culture, you know, that cultural, strong black man vibe is all throughout hip-hop, and it continues today with artists like J. Cole, Baby. You know, it's just so many people. It's difficult to, one of these days I'm going to do a playlist for you that I'll put on YouTube, specifically designed to bridge those gaps from today to yesterday, so that people will clearly be able to see the influences of our great ancestors in the music that continues today.
So, the two things with the lack of hands-on, but you also talked about men, you know what I mean? You notably emphasized that. I'm wondering, you know, what role, in fact, historically women, you know, some of the sisters have played in terms of conscious hip-hop, influenced by Garvey and others, and is that still happening today in terms of some strong black women who are out there also advancing hip-hop activism and social justice messaging and work?
Yes, sir. From back in the day, there was a sister who was one of the first hip-hop stars, man or woman. Her name was Sha-Rock, and she always kept it in the pocket. Along the years, we've had MC Light, we've had Queen Latifah, Lauryn Hill, and today we have a young lady from Atlanta named Sha-Rock. And there are plenty of others. I can't wait to actually share their music rather than just their names with you. So that, because many of these people are household names, and many of them should be. But the sisters definitely, just like historically how they held us down on from the front lines to the kitchen, the sisters still, from A to Z, from head to toe, they still on the front line as much or as more than the brothers has represented in today's current movie movement. Excuse me. You know the sisters like Fannie Lou Hamer, who was fed up of being fed up, sick and tired of being sick and tired. We would be nowhere without our sisters, not only on the front line, but being extremely brave and taking it, you know, to where it needed to go bravely.
And so I'm wondering, because at the State of the Black World Conference in Newark a couple of years ago, we've talked about this before, is there kind of a need for maybe a group of some of the elders to come together and begin to provide that mentorship? I mean, it's happening and that's good, you know, but I'm just wondering whether that's a part of something that people believe should happen. Is there more of a conscious, intentional effort, you know, to bring a young artist along, to nurture them and so forth? I'm just wondering what your thoughts about what your Absolutely. Thoughts are about that.
Elder Harry Belafonte had pulled us together about 13 years ago in Epps, Alabama. And he brought a council of elders. Matter of fact, he had almost every living member of the civil rights movement, from Jim Brown to Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson. And he brought us all together with young people around the country. And he basically started the conversation by saying that he believed that the civil rights movement had basically failed in passing the torch to the next generation. And he mentored myself, Jasiri X, Dave Chappelle, and many others. He brought us all together to begin to pass that torch to us and let us know that it's one movement and the struggle continues. And he also let us know that, you know, the Creator gave us our voices, not just to use for ourselves, not just to make money and entertain people, but he gave us our fame, our voice, and our money to use to free our people and to use it to bring about Black unity. And he passed on that knowledge from Paul Robeson to us. And many of us have begun to create organizations and to carry that message forward. Like we created One Hood after receiving those messages from Harry Belafonte. And I think that there's a lot of incredible organizations that are out there that are doing great individual jobs, but I don't think that we've done a very good job of connecting the dots nationally and internationally to pass on not only the Paul Robeson message, but the messages from the great Marcus Garvey are really needed in our music and our consciousness now, so that we could not just bridge the gaps in unity between our poor people and people who are suffering here in America, but to take that message internationally. And with the opportunities we have of modern day collaboration and understanding and actually connect with young people from the whole diaspora, from America to South America to the islands and connected back to Africa. I think that that's the mission that we should carry forward.
You know, speaking of, and I once wrote about this, I mean, actually, you know, Black music has really been a music that has helped to, in some ways, in a positive and constructive way, conquer the world. I mean, it's just been something about, whether it's blues, jazz, you know, rhythm and blues that have done it, you know, in so many ways. But certainly hip hop has done likewise. You know, it's been such a powerful genre. I'm wondering whether you would talk to us a little bit about some of the artists that you're familiar with, particularly contemporarily, you know, who are, you know, from the islands, from Africa and so forth, that we may not know about, who are doing some incredible work as hip hop activists and artists.
There's a brother out there that's named Skrillex. The Marley family is still at the top of it. There's Capleton.
Yeah.
You know, Capleton, he's an elder now, but he can still spit with the hottest young artists. And that's the one thing I really love and appreciate about reggae music in particular, is that as the artists age, they don't get played out. You know, we don't have a system over there that practices the separation of the young and old. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
That's a beautiful thing about that, you know, that culture. And I think that we need to really examine that and look at what rules are being applied to artists here in America, because in America, it's funny, but as a black artist ages, you know, the industry kind of stigmatizes them, and no matter how incredible their music is or what kind of incredible message in it, you know, it's like, oh, they're old now, they're played out. But we need to lose that and understand that something is not good because it's new, neither is it played out because it's old. But the fact of the matter is, there would be no hip-hop if it was no jazz, if there was no R&B, rhythm and blues, soul, gospel. It's all connected, and it's all one continuous flow, you know. And I think that because we don't control our music, we don't even control the content of what we're allowed to say and do as an artist is controlled by other people. We need to return our music and entertainment more inside, back to ourselves, and control our playlist and control the content better, so that we can balance out the content, so that no one can just make a whole genre of music appear to be negative when they're controlling what content is actually released.
Right. Well, very powerful as usual. And we do want to try to find ways to give a voice to some of these artists that you've been talking about. It's a production issue. We got to figure out how to be able to record the pieces and drop them in and those kind of things, which is can be challenging given some of the way in which we're doing broadcasting and programming WBAI virtually or doing it from different places and so forth. But we're going to try to work that out as we move forward. As we conclude,
we're going to work it out.
Right. As we conclude, any final words about as we look forward to this big forum, international forum that we're doing on Saturday, you know, any final words in your own mind about the impact of Marcus Mosiah Garvey?
Oh, well, I totally believe that Brother Garvey, he created going viral before the internet was created. You know, he was one of the greatest organizers this planet has ever seen. He was able to organize millions of indigenous African peoples all over the world without a cell phone, a telephone, you know what I'm saying, without the internet, without Twitter or Facebook. And, you know, we can learn a lot from his organizing skills and how he used speeches and his oratorial skills to really take his concepts and put them in a form that still resonates deeply today. And I encourage everybody to go to YouTube and search for Marcus Garvey's speeches. There's actual Marcus Garvey speeches up there, and a lot of documentaries and a lot of information out there. But all we need to do is understand the importance of the impact of the work that Marcus Garvey did, and understand that you can kill a revolutionary, but you can't kill the revolution, because you can't kill the ideas. We need to return and go back and look at the concepts and the ideas of Marcus Garvey and Garveyites, and understand that many of the tactics are still valuable, and a lot of the homework that he gave us are still undone. So there's still lots of work to do. The struggle continues.
All right. Okay. Paradise Gray, we really appreciate you being our in-house guru on all things hip-hop, and we'll be bringing you back on a regular basis. Thank you so much, and we're obviously looking forward to the piece that you're going to drop in on the Honorable Marcus Mosiah Garvey on this coming Saturday. Thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Elder. Peace and love.
All right. Peace and love. All right. Paradise Gray, member of the X-Clan. Of course, Sonny Abubadika Carson was kind of the mentor of the X-Clan. I think I've recounted the fact that they actually came out and campaigned for me when I was running as an independent candidate for mayor. Before I ran as a president, a candidate for president, I ran as a candidate for mayor of Youngstown, Ohio in 1977. Woo, that's right, way back then. Got more votes as an independent candidate than any independent candidate in the history of that city before or since. That's right. I almost won. Mayor of the city of Youngstown, and on a budget of less than $20,000, which says the message is, the power is often in the message and can sometimes overpower money. Again, we want to just say, brothers and sisters, we really, really hear WBAI, and I want you to listen, and I want people to step up, because I've been making the appeal for WBAI Buddies. And WBAI Buddies is what we call a sustaining contributor. We have the same thing with IBW. You know, we have a category called the Gregory Griffin Sustaining Contributor. We have a brother who's given IBW since 2002, $10 a month. And we dedicated a category after him because of that. So we are doing the same thing because we want to get as many people to sustaining contributors, and it's beginning to pay off. But from the point of view of the management of an organization or an enterprise like WBAI, Community Listeners, Community Sponsored Listener and Controlled Radio, it's great if you have thousands of people who are contributing as the base. In fact, at some point, if you got enough, you would even forego doing fundraising campaigns. So this is a challenge. I mean, this whole era is a challenge, but we need WBAI now more than ever before. And so, you know, I don't really know what else to say except that I am absolutely convinced that there are five people out there listening right now who can afford $10 a month, $120 a year to sustain WBAI. Now, when you go to give2wbai.org, you will see how to sign up as a WBAI buddy, but you'll also see the perks and benefits that you get for being a buddy. You get a t-shirt, a tote bag. I mean, there's all kinds of things that you get. But I, you know, and maybe I should like put that on heavier, but for me, that's sort of like, that's the icing on the cake. That's sort of, thank you. We appreciate you. But we, you know, I mean, I don't give to various causes because they're going to give me a premium. I mean, that's not a bad idea. I give because it's important. I give because it's needed. I give because it's contributing to something, to enriching me, empowering me, or empowering the community. And that's what we need. We need WBAI now in this fight that we're in, and it's exploding. And we're in a moment of inflection where people are in the streets like never before, pushing. You know, just a comment made by the Senator Cotton of Arkansas. Made a statement out that, you know, she's trying to change the curriculum not to include the 1619 Project, saying that slavery was an unfortunate but necessary evil. Can you imagine somebody actually saying, but that's one of the good things that's happened under the Orange Man. This stuff is out in the open, and that's good, so we can really see what you believe. But we are struggling and fighting here at WBAI to create opportunities for people to organize and to vocalize and to engage in changing this city, the country, and the world, for that matter, in terms of the programming that you hear. And we hope that Vantage Point is a part of that. So it's in that spirit, again, that I ask folks to go to the phones right now, 516-620-3602, 516-620-3602, and sign up to be a WBAI buddy. Support this community, listener-sponsored, and control, you control, no corporation, no institution, you control WBAI. And so it's great to get all the information, to absorb it and to have it, but be about the business of also supporting. So anyway, again, 516-620-3602, 516-620-3602. There are people waiting right now to take your call, and you can do it and dedicate it to Vantage Point. Same thing if you go to give to, two as a numeral, WBAI.org. Well, let me get up on the soapbox for just a couple of minutes here. We only have 4 minutes left. So let me just, I had a bunch of stuff to talk about, but I really wanted to emphasize the WBAI buddies. Now, I wish we had, you know, we'll get back to it so we can have these conversations with the audience. Because I have so many people who say that voting doesn't matter. Now, you know, there's a group called Black Vote Matter. You've heard the leader of that organization right here on WBAI, by the way, a very, very, very strong sister who organized the Black Votes Matter. But I want to give you a couple of illustrations, because I always say that the differences between the Democrats and the Republicans is not fundamental. It is incremental. In other words, neither one of them are revolutionary parties. Neither one of them are trying to overturn and create a new kind of system. It's not fundamental, but it's incremental, but not inconsequential. And by that, I mean it matters in the lives of people. Now, how you could have your eyes wide open and not see when people are hurting, I mean, seriously hurting, because of no fault of their own. You didn't, nobody asked for this COVID-19 to strike. Though one might say to some degree, some of us are complicit because we are not acting. I believe some of this is related to climate change, to all the convulsion that's taking place. Things are coming up and rising up that we never seen before. So we're complicit. But just look at how the Republicans are treating just one aspect of this whole notion about the next bill. $600. $600 extension or extra on unemployment benefits, which is literally keeping some people alive. What did the Republicans say? Oh, no. That the people don't want to work. If we give them $600, I mean, they will be disincentivized and all this kind of madness. $600? So what they want to do is they want to give people 70% of what they were making prior to the COVID pandemic. So if you were a minimum wage worker, a submit, you get 70% of that. Are you kidding me? Suppose you did make more than you were making before, then maybe you just got up to the point of making a living wage. You're seeing it in front of your very eyes. The Republicans don't care about working people, period. But you see the Democrats waging a struggle. Now, I mean, are they raising the banner for socialism now? No, they may not be, but it makes a difference in the lives of people who are out there hurting right now. So that's an example I wanted to bring to your attention, not to mention the stormtroopers who are going into Portland, Oregon. I mean, this is like, you talk about fascism. And just imagine the MAGA madness, the MAGA madness in Gwinnett County, Georgia. Parents, I knew they were white when I heard that it was people trying to, you know, march on the school, talking about open the schools, with a slogan like kids over COVID. Kids over COVID? Are you kidding me? The madness, the ignorance. It is not bliss. It is catastrophic. Well, as we honor John Lewis, the other thing I want to do is expose these hypocrites. Expose these hypocrites. Force these Republicans to vote for a John Lewis Voting Rights Bill. That's right. Expose all these hypocrites talking about they love John Lewis. Anyway, that's the soapbox. This is the professor, Dr. Ron Daniels, here on WBAI 99.5 FM on the Pacific Dial in collaboration with YCRadio.org. And we will see you again here next week on Vantage Point.